Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 21st. I'm John Gibson, and with me late on a Saturday night is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud? How you doing?
Yeah, man, I'm grooving. We had all kinds of things going on, including today. We had the start of the Japan series, which is wild.
And I don't know to think about, yes.
And I don't know about you, but I feel, you know, now's a good time to get this off my chest because the timing of the Japan series is just, it's driving me nuts that, you know, because we should be finishing the climax series right now on the 21st of October, right?
This is normal. Going off a little too soon.
Yeah, but the point is, yeah, so all I could think of, and because of the timing and other things, it's like everything's kind of like our schedules are sort of misshapen pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, and it feels strange. I had to fill out my MVP ballot in the middle of October, which is unusual, instead of the end of October, and it reminded me of a Twilight Zone episode. About 20 years ago, they remade The Twilight Zone, and there was one episode where Robert Klein, the comedian, was a salesman, and who, over the course of a single day, he gradually could understand less and less of the English people were saying to him.
Uh-huh.
Because one by one, words were changed out, switched out for other words that people were using freely. So, like, he, at work, his colleague says, you know, these young punks, they think they know everything, but there's one thing you can't teach, and that's tuna fish. So instead of experience, he says tuna fish, and then his wife asks if he's hungry, and except she says, darling, are you slapped? Until finally, and it's like, finally, so many words are changed that he cannot understand a single thing, and he's I don't know what, curled up in a ball in a corner, just drooling and babbling to himself. And that's kind of what I feel like with the Japan series.
Whoa, you're taking us to a different world here. That's a great way to start off the show. from the start. All right.
Yeah, what is the point is, it's really weird. I just want to get people to understand how, I mean, if you're in America and you know you've got the playoffs going on, and in the Japan series, right, isn't that normal all this time of year? But if you're in Japan and your life has been tuned to the rhythm of NPB for 30 years or so,
mm-hmm.
to hold this suddenly in the middle of October is just punishing.
Yeah.
It's punishing.
We got it. Let's move on. I'm with you because we've got so much going on with the Rugby World Cup going on now. We've got a lot of talk about the Olympics for next year and where to put the marathon and
where. I know where they can put it.
I'm sure you do. And we've got, you know, the World Series going on at the same time. There's a lot of sports things right. going on. The NBA is about to start. The NFL is going strong.
So if you spot me drooling and babbling to myself, that you know
just
that's
think
the,
it's Thursday.
No, you say that's all the fault of the Japan series.
Okay. Well, on this week's show, we have the start of the Japan series. We're going to talk about the Japan series matchup. We're going to discuss Thursday's draft, and we've got some notes and a great high-heat question, so let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so no interview this week. We'll just get right into the games. And tonight was game one on Saturday night. I'm saying Saturday night, but it's early on Sunday morning at the moment. So, but we'll refer to it as Saturday night and tonight in this episode. And the Hawks win game one, 7-2. And Kodai Senga, their ace, gets the start. He goes seven strong innings. He wasn't overpowering. He only had five strikeouts, and he walked three, but he only gave up three hits, and he looked really good. He looked in control the whole time, and then
was Kodai Senga. You know, he was like he is often.
Yes.
In that his stuff is really good. I mean, most of his stuff is really good, and today was just sort of like Kodai Senga, but more so, because when he was trying to go like just a little bit out of the zone.
Mm-hmm.
He was missing the zone by like 3 feet. You know, he bounced a pitch, I think, 10 feet in front of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the ball was like when he got away from attacking the strike zone. Yeah, and his location, I'll just say his location was a little worse than usual today.
Right. But yeah, you're right. He did look like himself. He led the way. But remember, I believe he was a developmental player.
He was.
He started. And the offensive, not the offensive hero, but one of the offensive stars tonight was also assigned as a developmental player. And he has been hitting incredibly this postseason. That's Taisei Makihara, who's really mm-hmm. starting to look like the best second baseman in the PL if you stop looking around and just concentrate on what he's doing defensively. And then the fact that he's giving he hit over 400 in the climax series against the Lions, and I don't remember what he did in the first stage, but now, you know, the Hawks, you look up, and they've won 7 consecutive postseason games because they lost that first game to the Eagles in the 3-game series, and then they won the next 2, and then won 4 straight in Tokorozawa, and now on Saturday night, so 7 consecutive games. So they're starting to look like the SoftBank Hawks, the ones who we just assume were going to win the Pacific League and, you know, dominate in the postseason like they are right now. It's kind of boring.
Yeah, so they had the Hawks starting lineup. They had Senga, who was taken in the 4th round of the developmental draft. Now, for those of you...
And that was a long time ago.
That was in 2010.
2010, yeah.
Okay, now, for those... Basically, the developmental draft is for once, you know, they say, okay, guys, are you done? Because everybody in the regular draft, if they sign them, they have to sign them to a regular NPB contract, which is a minimum salary of about $50,000.
Right.
But the developmental guys don't count against their roster, mm-hmm. and they can't play in the Pacific or Central League. But they only cost about $30,000 a year, so they're basically cheap. You know, they're sort of like peasant levies. Or, you know, like a militia kind of guys. So they take passes over on.
Yeah, and in football and NBA terms, or NFL and NBA terms, they're basically practice squad or
right,
G League
right,
guys.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So Senga was taken in the 4th round of guys that nobody wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And Makihara was taken in the 5th round of guys that nobody wanted. And I think Takuya Kai was taken in the same draft. I think he was in the 7th round.
Well,
but almost all these guys are SoftBank guys because the Hawks and the Giants are basically the two teams that take the bulk of the developmental guys.
Right. And so those are the guys. Yeah, in fact, Kai, the starting catcher tonight, now he didn't get a hit, but he is a weapon behind the plate
well,
with
he's
the arm and everything.
He was the MVP of the 2018 Japan Series, so yeah.
Yeah, so they've got the development thing down in SoftBank because they're getting these guys and they're finding them and they're bringing out
indeed.
The best.
Okay, they went just to clear it up. In the 2010 developmental draft, Senga went 4th, Makihara went 5th, and
yeah, they said that
Kai went
6th. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Kai was the same year as well.
Yep.
Wow, so they struck gold 3 times.
So three of their 10 starters were guys that nobody wanted to draft.
Wow. Wow, you mean there's 10 starters tonight, yeah.
10 starters in game 1 of the Japan series.
One. Wow, wow. So, yeah, and then you had Yurisbel Graciel hitting a home run, and that was after Shinnosuke Abe takes his first at-bat in the Japan Series in his retirement season here, and he hits a home run to put the Giants up in the second inning, and then Graciel comes back with a 2-run shot in the bottom of the inning,
mm-hmm.
and that was the last time the Giants saw the lead, and yeah, it was a fun game, I think, up until about the 5th inning when it was 2-1. And then when the Hawks got that 3rd run and went up 3-1, I kind of felt that was it because of their bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
But there were still 9 outs to go, and I thought, okay, well, the Giants, they're the best team in the Central League. They basically were most of the season if they can get anything going and get a rally. And they had the you know, they had Sakamoto, they had Hayato Sakamoto leading off in the sixth inning, but, you know, nothing was really going on in that inning. And then the seventh inning, they got two runners on, but they had to send up Shinosuke Shigenobu, and he struck out. And I thought, man, oh man, you know, they're putting Abe, who has been a really good pinch hitter for them, he's the DH, and they're playing Takumi Oshiro at first base, and he was a pretty good pinch hitter for them. And so now they're sending up a guy who's normally a pinch runner for them, and he can hit, but I don't think that's the guy you want in that situation. You really want somebody who can drive the ball. It was two outs. Maybe if you get to Kame, you can get another hit, so you can string a couple hits together. But I really felt like there's the situation where the Central League rosters, where there's no built-in DH, they really get hurt in these Pacific League parks when they have to do this and play a person or get someone out there as a DH. They're really playing a really good bat off the bench, but they lose that little pop that they might need in a late game situation, and that's what I saw there.
That's interesting. Now, the interesting thing about that inning was, so Makihara, as we were talking about, he really, that was his spot right there, because in the sixth inning, in the bottom of the sixth, he comes up and he smacks a ground ball past first base, and it's a double. You know, it's one of those, if he hits it 3 feet to the left, it's an out. But anyway, so he's on second, and then he scores on a sacrifice fly that I thought, when it came off the bat, I thought it was an infield fly.
I thought so too, and that's what it looks like on TV.
Because
that's why it's so difficult.
He got so jammed, and but I think the pitch was hard, and he must have had a little bit of an uppercut, Akira Nakamura, that the ball carried to medium deep center, but that was not really a safe sacrifice fly, but Makihara did well. I thought it was a great play all around, because Makihara did well to score. It was a really good throw from Yoshihiro Maru. And
it was an okay throw. I'm going to stop you on that one, because it reminded me, and I don't remember exactly what year it was, but the year that the Fighters and the Carp played in the Japan Series, and Maru stepped in front of Seiya Suzuki to take a fly ball that probably Seiya Suzuki has a stronger arm, we know, and at least that was always my opinion from watching him, watching the play, that he had the stronger of the two arms. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say we know.
But well, he needed to get the ball away. He got it away quickly. It was accurate.
He doesn't have a strong enough arm to.
Well, the other thing was the ball, because of the trajectory of the ball, I said it was like a pop-up. It was coming essentially straight down. He didn't have a chance. You know, a lot of guys will, when they see they've got to make a throw at the plate, will sort of take a running start to catch the ball.
Right, and when you
he had to kind of camp under it, and then go into throwing motion. But I thought it was okay, and I thought it was not very deep. So it was like, it was deeper than I thought it was, but it still wasn't very deep. Anyway, so it was good. It was good that he could score, because it was not an easy sacrifice fly.
No, it wasn't, and you're right in the fact that the way he had to set up under it and everything, but I think that's the weakest part of his game in center field is his arm, and I didn't, once well, I saw how I deep mean, it was, I thought that was an easy sacrifice.
I was surprised that he made it that close, to be honest, and I love the little meaningless decoy, because nobody was fooled by it. I love Seiji Kobayashi standing there at the home plate like, yeah, go ahead and score. The throw's never coming. And then it looked like he was waiting outside a candy store for somebody to come out. Waiting outside the candy store for someone to rob it.
I guess maybe it was 2016 was when the Carp and the Fighters played, and it so reminded me of that play. I'm like, oh, that's right. You know, Maru's arm isn't all that great, and I remember him stepping in front of Suzuki when Suzuki should have taken that throw, and so that's the way I saw that play. So I didn't think it was that deep a a ball, and that he probably, when I thought about who was running, and I thought, I'm not sure how fast Makihara is, but yeah, he went and he was going the whole way, and he is pretty fast. And
he's fast enough, and he judged it well, which I like that. And the other thing that was interesting is, okay, now it comes up and it's they've got a 2-run lead, and it's the top of the seventh, and there's one out. And the first out is, just a routine, more or less routine fly from Abe. He missed the ball. And then basically the next three batters hit the ball pretty well.
Yeah, Makihara made a diving play, right?
Yep. Right. So that really saved the inning, because Senga was struggling at this point. His pitches had lost a little zip, and people were basically looking for the cutter, and so Makihara saves the day with a diving catch of a line drive for the second out, and the next two guys single, and he's got runners on first and third before the aforementioned Shinosuke Shigenobu comes up for a pinch hit strikeout.
Mm-hmm.
That one I'm fine with. I mean, generally I would have left Koba. I don't see really what advantage it is throwing Shigenobu in there to strike out for Kobayashi.
Yeah.
He's not a significantly better. Now this is something I want to get to, or at least I'll just mention here. Basically, that batters coming off the bench are not as good as batters in the game. There's a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as big a penalty as it is in the majors, where it's fairly large. But the point being that if the guy you're replacing is not significantly better hitter, then don't worry about getting a platoon advantage, because you're losing more than you're gaining. Anyway, so they bring in Shinosuke Shigenobu, who's not a significantly better hitter than Kobayashi, although he's a left-handed hitter. To me, that's essentially Hara's reducing his chances of scoring in that situation. But the analysts really loved it.
Well, I mean, sometimes I look at those matchups and I think, well, it's not always what your player does well against the split. It's what the opponent doesn't do well against the split sometimes. So maybe Hara's decision was influenced by the fact that perhaps in late game situations, as that was a seventh inning situation where the pitcher is a little bit tired, he has a little less on his fastball and doesn't throw one of his better pitches to left-handers as well. And so maybe that's what Hara was trying to play on. So,
but generally, what I'm going to say about that small data, small sample size.
Well,
nobody's seen it enough to actually know. Nobody has seen it enough to actually know that the guy can't hit this from this pitcher. You can only just make guesses.
Okay.
And it's a small sample size, so people tend to think, well, that was the one where Ramichan was blowing smoke about we shouldn't start Nakai because he didn't, he was two for 19 against Giants left-handed pitchers, which even Ramichan was, I think he was doing an Ochiai, a Hiromitsu Ochiai, and just leading the reporters down a path. I think he just didn't want to answer the question.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's not actually what I meant, though. I meant, in general, in the seventh inning against left-handers, that certain pitchers don't throw certain pitches well against certain matchups.
Sure.
So, and there's a lot of data on that. There'd be, especially on Senga, he threw a lot of innings. So what does he do in the seventh inning against left-handed batters when he's past the 100
That's still a very, very small data sample.
Okay.
I'm not buying that I saw it.
No, I would imagine there's more data out there.
Well, sure there is. There's plenty of data, but I'm still saying that it's still a small sample because of the very tiny parameters you're giving to it.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
And by the time you guys listen to this, certainly game two will be over because that will be played.
Although if you were really wise, you would refrain from listening or watching the news about game two until next week's podcast.
until the podcast comes out on Monday.
The one that's coming out after this one, next week.
Oh, next week. Oh, really?
That's right.
Okay. If you were really wise.
Okay, wise. Okay. Loyal.
If there's
now,
a new loyal.
Now I'm sounding now I'm sounding presidential. If you don't do what I say, you're disloyal. Okay.
So, so I wanted to shift the conversation to the matchup overall. So I was excited for the matchup when we learned that it was going to be the Giants and the Hawks. And I thought the Central League, the Giants really represent the Central League in terms of the strength of the Central League.
They
were the best. I thought they were the best team this
year. Oh, yeah, I think so. I think they were clearly the best team from start to finish. Yeah.
And there's a lot of balance, a lot of pitching balance, a lot of starting pitching balance. They managed the bullpen and figured out slots and got Scott Matheson back healthy enough to where he can help contribute. So I like that. I like the starters. I figured Shun Yamaguchi, of course it was in the news too, but he would get the call in game one. And then CC Mercedes will be the game two starter. But after that, it just kind of gets murky in terms of the starting pitching for the Giants. Now, I read that Tomoyuki Sugano, who is on the 40-man roster, so he's he can be activated to pitch, that he's likely to pitch Game 4, but they have to get through Game 3, and that seems like what I saw. Yuki Takahashi, the little left-hander, is supposed to throw that game, and then they will go back to Yamaguchi. So, yeah, I like what they have, and I do like some of the guys they have out of the bullpen. And Kyosuke
Takagi.
Kyosuke Takagi, the left-hander. He had been really good until it got late in the season, but that might be just a lot of innings build up for him, so maybe he's rested and he can be more effective. Kazuto Takagi, who didn't have such a good outing tonight. he ended up giving up 3 earned runs tonight. So he got 2 outs, but gave up 3 runs. But those were late. And then Toshiki Sakurai out of the bullpen. I kind of like him coming in to maybe situations where they have runners on. So, and you've got Scott Matheson and Hirokazu Sawamura. So I like their bullpen. What about you?
Well, I like the Giants. One of the things that's hard to deal with the Giants, or at least hard to think about, is as I've been telling or complaining or moaning the fact that the past 3 weeks I've been going about park factors and trying to figure out a better way to do my park factors and understand how each park affects runs, because it's, Bill James has a head of wise things. If you think you know how to do park factors, that proves you don't really understand what the problem is. anyway, I'm trying to sort of like reinvent the wheel here, or make a better wheel, so to speak. One
rounder wheel, huh? Rounder.
Yeah, one rounder than a perfect circle kind of wheel. Anyway, the thing that surprised me, and when I'm doing the park factors every year, there's always a little surprise. Like I expected, like Zozo Marine Stadium to be a hitter's park this year, and it wasn't. It was a better home run park than it was the previous years, but it really wasn't much better of a run scoring park overall. But anyway, the thing I'm getting to, or the reason I brought it up, is the Giants gave up a ton of runs this year, and they scored a zillion runs. And that and Tokyo Dome has for about a decade been a good home run park, but a good pitcher's park, because basically it cut down on all the rest of the offense besides home runs.
Mm-hmm.
So there were fewer runners on base when the home runs went out, and fewer doubles and fewer triples. So I was quite surprised to find out that Tokyo Dome is now one of the best ranked as one of the best hitters parks in Japan. And it's just so abnormal, but it makes sense. And I looked at the home runs, and they hit 50% more. They always hit about 30% more home runs in Tokyo Dome than their other games, but the Giants this year hit 50% more home runs. That's like Jingu stuff.
Yeah.
So it's really weird. And for those of you who you know, maybe you're inclined to dislike the Giants, and I know there are people who are inclined to dislike the Giants. You say,
really?
Aha, I know, isn't that a shock?
And I haven't met
and then somebody
people.
Says, well, there you go, Sakamoto. You know, that's the explains why he hit 40 home runs this year. And the answer is it doesn't, because while the Giants hit 50% more home runs at Tokyo Dome instead of 30%, actually his numbers did not as increase as much as the team just did. So basically he just became a better home run hitter in a park that helped him hit more home runs than before. So okay. Those two things collided to help, you know, to lift him. If nothing had changed, he probably would have been a 35 or 36 home run guy. So anyway, that's but my point about this, and when you mentioned the bullpen, was their bullpen runs allowed numbers were not really very good this year. They were steady at the end of the year, you know, after Ruby De La Rosa came along and Scott Mathison was back, and they were steady in the time when Kota Nakagawa was, you know, was the bee's knees in the middle of the season.
Right.
But overall they've been poor, and I think overall they've been poor partly because the season was the park was unexpectedly helping opposing hitters.
Okay.
And I think that affects how we evaluate the seasons. So I don't know, but I mean, you know, you said they were good, and I was going to say, well, their numbers don't say they were good, but on the other hand, the park was hurting them much more than it had in the past. So maybe the numbers aren't as bad as they looked. Sorry for the long-winded explanation of saying the Giants' bullpen is better than their numbers.
No, I mean, these guys, you know, from what I saw, were fairly effective. And as much as we saw bullpens blow up over the season, I think they were probably one of the more consistent teams in NPB, for sure. They were more consistent teams in the Central League, but I think overall, too. So, and they have Christian Villanueva on the roster as well. And I thought that when I saw the roster released, and that's the 40-man, because he might not be active for each game, but he's on the 40-man postseason in terms of the Japan.
And you know
season.
What? They can change the roster on a daily basis.
Yes.
So anybody on that 40-man roster could be starting tomorrow, and then be gone the next day. So it's like. It's a very deep well, and they only have to play 12 innings now instead of 15. So
right. Oh, and by the way, I did look it up. So Sakamoto hit 17 of his home runs in away stadiums in terms of the breakdown. So anyway, I thought Villanueva would be a person they brought in to be the DH, and I was kind of surprised the opening day lineup or the first game lineup. So maybe they might change some of that for game two and going forward. And he might get to play at home even. But the one thing I did see on Pro Yaku News, I don't know if you're still watching it, but they did bring up the fact that the Giants and the Hawks each hit 183 home runs this year, but that the Giants had scored a lot more runs overall than the Hawks, and so they were saying, well, that gives them a chance. And I'm like, and, you know, these circumstances are so different.
Yep.
You know, their 183 home runs don't equal the Hawks' 183 home runs.
No, they don't.
No, let's not think that that's equal. And so the fact that they scored more runs, and you can speak to that with your park effects, but it's also the pitching effects, right?
I think that's the difference between we play in a real league and you guys play in the Central League.
Sandbox, right?
Hashtag high.
No, I'm telling you, I mean, this is one. Although I've noticed, I went back and I was sort of scanning stuff and data in Delta Graphs the other day, and I noticed that And like this year's interleague, I noticed that the Central League did very well in runs scored and runs allowed relative to the number of wins and losses, which is a good sign that they're not quite as bad as we expect them to be. So I think they have actually maybe in the last two or three years, the Central League has improved more than the Pacific League has. in that they're not as far behind.
Which is not going to be,
you know, I'm sure a lot of people are not happy to hear that they're still behind, but hey, they haven't won a Japan series in 7 years. They won Interleague probably less often than that. So no, they're still behind, but it's not a big gap.
Right, right. Well, it was the Giants who have broken through each time the Central League has won the Japan series, but that's, that's been
each time
now. In the past 10 years.
Yes. 2009 and 2012,
Okay, let's talk about the Hawks a little bit. Now, we did see Kodai Senga, their ace, on Saturday, and we were supposed to see Rei Takahashi, I believe it is, on Sunday in Game 2. And then after that, I'm expecting Tsuyoshi Wada, Rick Vandenhert, kind of a combination.
I don't know.
For the Games 3 and 4 now.
As much as I love Tsuyoshi Wada. I hope he's fit, because I haven't seen anything that makes me think he's fit since the day he came back from his injury.
Those are the games I'm thinking are going to be the bullpen games. But I'm just wondering, you know, that's a bad matchup for those guys in that they'll be playing at Tokyo Dome where you can get those cheap home runs. So
I think SoftBank's done a good job to have cheap home runs too.
Okay, yeah, well, with the
with the home run terraces, yeah.
The home run terrace in that series with that first game, I guess it was, with the Eagles, where they had all those home runs that went into the terrace. So, yeah, true. So they've done a good job. So, you know, I like their pitchers. I like their bullpen better, though. And when I look at these teams and I, you know, try to assess what we might see the rest of the series, I fully just expect a parade of bullpen pitchers from both teams in all the games, and I think we saw a little bit of that tonight. Not so much with the Hawks, but very much so with the pressure that the Hawks put on you as a team throughout. You know, going through as a starting pitcher, you're going through the lineup a couple, three times, and it just wears on you. You could see Shun Yamaguchi when he got into trouble tonight. He was just he walked guys trying to hit really tight windows with some of his pitches and not being able to hit them, and then, you know, walking and then giving up that sacrifice fly, which was another situation where he got a good pitch. It didn't look like it was going to be anything.
He said it.
I thought so too. I thought it was on the infield when it went up.
No, I liked him today. I mean, his control, as I said, his location was really sharp through five innings. And
Right. But it's just so difficult to get through that Hawks lineup multiple times.
That's
why I think we're gonna see a lot of bullpen.
It is. And the other thing is that obviously the Hawks, I thought the Hawks adjusted quite well. Basically, they were laying off pitches better, and that was not easy to do. I mean, I thought for the first three or four innings, I'm going, okay, two strikes. You know he's going to throw you a splitter. You know it's not going to be in the strike zone, and oh, there he goes, swinging the ball in the dirt again. You know, it was like time after time after time, but finally, you know, when he had runners on base when he had a base open, I guess there's, you know, it's so funny, you know, some of the dumb stuff that happens in Japanese baseball. Sometimes it's dumb stuff because, and I've said this before and written this before, sometimes you can do something that's on the surface really, really stupid.
On the surface only, huh?
Well, no, because you know your opponent's going to do something even dumber in response. Okay. I'm not kidding. I mean, it's like,
all right.
They bunted of course, the first base was open anyway, and they have one of Kenta Imamiya is a tremendous hitter. He's disciplined. He can drive the ball. Let's have him bunt when they're in a bunt shift, and let's have him bunt regardless of where the ball is thrown.
Okay.
I mean, it's just like I wanted to take Kimiyasu Kudo out to the woodpile and beat him with a stick.
And I sat there watching that thinking, see that, Dodgers, if you actually move the runners over and try to get them in, you can get a run on the board instead of not getting a run. But anyway, I digress. Let's get back on track.
It's your turn.
I think I looked at the teams, and I think they're actually really close in terms of the the runs they can generate. But I just think the SoftBank Hawks are going to outpitch the Giants, and their bullpen is just a little bit better. And so that's why I picked them. But I do think the Giants can get a couple games, and they'll probably get them at home.
Yep.
So I've got the Hawks winning in six. But I can definitely see, and you posted on Twitter right after I posted that you have the Hawks in five. And I suspect that you wanted to say four, but that you wanted to show some respect to the Giants.
It wasn't about respect to the Giants, because I think they're a good team, but I just think the Hawks are better. I still think the Central League teams don't quite realize the enormity of the challenge of playing Pacific League teams. They still come in there thinking, okay, we did this in the season, so we're a good team. And I think professional athletes have to be confident, but it's the coach's job to sort of give them reality checks. And I think, I don't know, with Hara back, and maybe that's a thing, I don't know, a confidence thing, but I think still the Central League is still inferior. I don't know, from what I saw the managing tonight, I didn't see anything from either of these guys that made me all that interest. I have kudos, incessant, after the game when they said, wow, you were really working hard to do all these different things in the game. What do you mean, like making meaningless changes and tactical decisions? Because it shows how serious you are about winning, that you really want to do all these obscure things like bunting with your best hitters in games when you're leading by six runs and bringing in your closer with a six run lead.
I thought he hadn't pitched in a while. It's a really safe situation. It was a good move to bring him in, and I thought I would have done it too.
There's an argument for that. True, and he hasn't pitched for a while. I guess that's fair enough. I mean, like I said, usually there are extenuating circumstances, and as you are fond of saying, that we don't know everything, and obviously I know less than not everything. So fair enough. Yeah, I mean, there could be a good reason for it. I don't know there's a good reason for bunting Seiichi Fujikawa in the eighth inning. Or Kendama Miya in the seventh. So
yeah, I don't know about the Uchikawa bunt that was called.
Or the sixth, excuse me.
All right. Well, we'll see how this series goes this week upcoming, and it could be over by the next time that we talk to you. But let's move on. Let's make. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, if it's not over, we're in trouble.
Oh, okay. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the draft. It was this past Thursday. Now, there was no early drama in the draft with guys dropping the envelopes or somebody pumping a fist thinking that they won when they hadn't won.
Been pretty common, yeah. We usually have one of those every year.
Yeah, we didn't have any representatives jumping up and down like children after they opened their envelopes. I was going into this draft thinking Roki Sasaki, the hard-throwing, skinny high schooler, was the guy who was going to get all the attention, and it just didn't seem to be that way. It seemed to be kind of split.
Yep.
And Yasunobu Okugawa, I thought he was a big kid. He's not actually that big. He's 6 feet tall, but he went first, sort of, to the Yakult Swallows, and that was in a lottery pick among... What was it? Was it three teams?
I
don't remember. Yeah, I took my notes. Just to let you guys know, I usually write down notes on paper because I'm usually at the office. I was not at the draft this year. And I came home, and I think one of the twins grabbed my notes because they always clean out my little lunch bag, and they threw them away. And it happened to be the trash day the next day, so they got thrown out. So I don't remember. I wrote down all this stuff, but I don't have it.
Okay. Then I'll quickly do it. Roki Sasaki was picked by four teams, all Pacific League teams.
Yes, and I thought that was odd. And I thought
that was interesting because two teams
I thought it was odd, yeah.
That publicly praised him to the skies and said, in fact, the SoftBank Hawks chief amateur scout said, I've never seen a player with this kind of potential in 20 years of scouting.
Right.
Okay. and then the Hawks shied away from him. Now, the Hawks were one of the 11 teams to hold meetings with him in the past couple of weeks since he announced that he was going to enter the draft. And what that leads me to believe is that although at the press conference he said, I am not thinking about MLB at this moment, I'm also not planning to commit to a team that won't post me. And I have to think that the Yomiuri Giants, who never shy away from anybody, and the SoftBank Hawks, the two teams that have never posted anybody and are hoping will, and who are hoping they will never have to post anybody, both went for they both went for different players. The Giants went for Yasunobu Okugawa, and the Hawks went for the high school infielder Takaya Ishikawa. So they both stayed away from the guy that they basically came out and said was the best player in the draft.
Right.
Indicating to me that while Mr. Sasaki publicly did not want to make a spectacle of himself and say, I'm thinking about MLB, that he is in fact thinking about MLB.
Right. And I thought another thing that was interesting about his situation is that, remember, he came one game away from winning the regional so that his team could go to Koshien and play in the national tournament, but he was rested, and we talked about it on the show. It was such a big deal, and it was such a rare and unprecedented move that it drew a lot of attention and created a firestorm and all kinds of tons of unsolicited opinions on the matter. But the fact that he might have been injured at that time kind of made me think that's maybe why there were only four teams that selected him. But I don't know, because we never really got a full report. At least I never paid attention to any of the full reports about his injury. So I'm just wondering if that had some kind of role in the fact that only four teams, because I really thought that this was going to be a player who maybe had six or seven teams trying to draft him.
No high school pitcher has ever had seven. Yusei Kikuchi had six, which is the current record. And the interesting thing, that could be. And I think the fact that, A, that he didn't pitch, there could be some concerns about that he didn't pitch. There was a report that was then denied that he had had some discomfort in his arm.
Right, right.
The day before.
Correct, yes, I remember that.
And then he had a blister when he was pitching in the under-18 national team in Korea a month or so ago. And he came out of a game after, I think, facing one batter. And that was his only exposure over there, leaving a bunch of scouts going, why do we come to Korea?
Right. Yeah. Well, let's go eat.
Exactly.
Okay. So anyway, Lotte goes into a four-way drawing. And Rakuten, Seibu, and
Nippon Ham.
And so of those teams, I was thinking, okay, well, Seibu, before we continue, I always, competitive balance or just improving. So I was hoping that, the teams that didn't make the playoffs this year would be able to get better through the draft. Now, whether, they make the right choices or not, that's up to them, but I was just hoping that they had the opportunity and that these guys play out. And so that I think since we talked about the draft for the first time on JBW, that's always been my thing, is I want the weaker teams to get better, because basically who wants to see the stupidly rich, the ridiculously rich, get more money that they can't even put in their pockets and have to, dangle it from their ears and
I do, because what's good for the Yomiuri Giants and SoftBank Hawks is good for us, isn't it? The trickle down theory.
# high heat.
All the fans are better off if the two most powerful organizations get more powerful. No.
Right. The problem with the trickle down is they try to make sure nothing trickles down. But anyway,
they do a good job of that.
Yeah. So I did see some. Iguchi was the second of the four teams' representatives to pick, and he chose the winning lot. So I did see some talk on Twitter about he has a hand of God, because this is 2 years in a row that he Yeah, whatever. So,
well, the Dragons got their guy twice, so two years in a row as well. So that was something.
Well, yeah, again, whatever. It's just dumb luck. But so Sasaki throws hard. I'm hoping that he comes on and at least can develop into a pitcher who at some point soon assists them. But I started to think, who are the guys who have come straight from high school as pitchers and gone straight to the top team and become a star in the past 10 years or so?
Shohei Ohtani.
There aren't that many, yeah. Ohtani is one, I think.
Wakui.
Daisuke Matsuzaka was way, way back in the day. I'm talking about the past 10 years.
No, I would say.
Yeah, I'm talking about the past 10 years.
Oh, 10 years. Well, Wakui was just before that. Guys who came out of high school and became stars. Well, even Masahiro Tanaka wasn't.
Tanaka, but that's more than 10 years ago now.
And he wasn't, because he had a kind of an up and down first year and a half or so.
Well, that wasn't my point. I mean, he came on, he eventually developed into a big star, but not necessarily that first season.
Big stars.
Yeah, we've got Darvish, we've got Ohtani, we've got...
Well, Kodai Senga is probably the most recent then, and he was forever on the farm team.
Yeah, so no, there just really haven't been that many. So I don't expect Sasaki to do it either, but I'm hoping that he can contribute a little bit to the team next year. So so that was good. And then Okugawa goes to the Swallows, and I thought, okay, well, he's their opening day starter next year.
Now you're being mean.
I am not being mean. Their pitching was historically bad this year. Okay. I mean, horrendous doesn't get close to explaining what their pitching was in terms of, you know, the numbers and what they did historically, and having a losing record against every team they played against in a season, being the first team to do that. That it was just awful. Okay, so
since interleague played, yeah.
Yes. So I don't expect him to be the opening day starter, but I hope he can make the rotation, because I'd like to see him. I certainly would like to see him. And everybody says he's a horse. I think he's a guy who's around 6 feet. I think he's a little bit bigger than 6 feet tall. But
he's stockier than Mr. But Sasaki is.
Yeah, he's put together a little bit. So, you know, and...
Yeah, you know, and it's funny, because sometimes teams have these guys, and sometimes that team turns out to be the Hanshin Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, 7 or 8 years down the road, you're going like, you still want that guy?
Yeah, remember that guy who was supposed to do that stuff and at that thing?
Remember that guy who people argued whether he was a better pitcher than Shohei Ohtani? What was his name? I forgot.
Yeah, what was his name? Where is he? You know, the Swallows, I'm looking forward to seeing them, what they do, and I hope that Okugawa can be part of that that rebuild that their new manager Shingo Takatsu is going to put the team through, and is being the key man on that team, as he said in his press conference. So, and you've talked about this in the past as well, that there are usually more pitchers taken than position players in the draft, and that's a common thing.
Yeah, this year is kind of a reverse of the trend, in that there were a lot more pitchers. This is sort of the historic norm, vastly more pitchers. Although I guess it's typically normal that 12 pitchers go in the first round instead of 11.
Mm-hmm.
But the last couple of years, we've had a lot of position players go in the top two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was the new trend. But this year, I'll be honest, though, I was less interested in the draft. I went to the draft and basically to write a Roki Sasaki story.
Right.
And so when the first round ended, I finished off my story I had already written. And then when the second round ended, I went to get quotes from manager Iguchi, and then I filed an update and I was gone.
Yep.
So it wasn't about the draft, it was about the story.
Right.
It was about my drafts of my story.
Right, the drafts, the first draft and the second draft.
Exactly, first round, we're calling this instead of update, we're going to call it second round.
Right. So one other note, the Cebu Lions drafted 5 pitchers, and that was the highest number of pitchers drafted on draft day. And that's no surprise the way I maligned their pitching and talked about how they needed. But I remember a few years back, they drafted a bunch of pitchers, and I thought that they had sort of concentrated on trying to develop those guys. So they're that didn't really work out for them in terms of developing guys over a long period. But you said that there were that it has gone back to there being more pitchers drafted.
Well, this year, the first round there were 11 pitchers taken, which is the first time in about 3 years. So, it used to be 12, like clockwork.
Wow, yeah. And I did notice, you mentioned a second ago, slugging infielder Takai Ishikawa, the Dragons had to draw for him, and they did get him.
Talking about the guys who went in the guys who were chosen, pre-selected to be the first-round draft choices. I didn't stick around for the rest of the draft.
You didn't stick around. Yeah, you were gone. So, yeah, the Dragons getting Ishikawa, but I thought, well, he's an infielder. I wonder where he's going to play, but apparently he has some power. He's he's about 6'1", maybe a little bit taller than 6'1", but I don't know where, he might be playing. I thought maybe they're drafting a new left fielder, so that might be what they're trying to do in that respect, because I thought their infield was pretty much... in terms of the breakout of Toshiki Abe this year for them at second base, that pretty much set their infield. And they've got Akira Neo, who was their first pick last year, whom they're waiting for him to be able to play on the top team. I don't think he showed enough in the couple games that he played at the end of the season to earn it. But maybe good winter and fall will help him develop. But anyway, let's move on.
Hold on. Before we move along, and I, because again, I was focused on Roki Sasaki, I did not notice that the Bay Stars, the Bay Stars and the Hiroshima Carp were the two teams that stayed away from the big three.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bay Stars went for an infielder. They went for Kato Mori, a high school infielder from... Toin Gakuin High School, not Osaka Toin, but the one in Kanagawa Prefecture.
Right, he's a local boy.
Mm, so, as Ishikawa is with the Dragons, he's a guy from Aichi Prefecture, yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. Correct. Yeah.
Okay,
and,
I just wanted to add that. There were two first-round infielders taken, so okay. All is right,
right
with the world.
Okay, and yeah, I like the... wanted to comment about the Yakult Swallows and taking 4 pitchers. They did take pitchers who seem like they're ready. They took 2 or 3 guys out of college, and I think they're hoping to get some immediate returns on those guys. 2 of them are 22, 1 of them is 21.
Mm-hmm.
So they got some guys who are older, and I think they kind of went with the I think the Bay Stars have had some success taking guys who are older and who seemed to come on as rookies and contribute on the mound for them.
So. Well, it's kind of funny. The Bay Stars actually didn't take a left-handed college pitcher for the second year in a row. I mean, they had a stretch where all they did was take left-handed college pitchers, and then last year they broke that up by taking a right-handed college pitcher.
There you go. We'll flip that over.
Took a high school infielder, which is really, I think the last time they had a first round pick who was a high school infielder was probably Yoshitomo Tsutsugo.
Tsutsugo, yeah, that's what I was thinking. All right, making a two-same transition, we've got a couple notes before we get to the high heat question. And the first one is the players of the month for September were announced. And
wow.
Zach Neal of Cebu was the pitcher, and Masataka Yoshida of Oryx was the hitter. Did you have any issues with those two guys? I doubt.
Yeah, I got tons of issues with those two guys.
First of all,
neither of them are as tall as me, so, they're probably not. I'm kidding. I'll start with Zach Neal, and he's the one I don't have an issue with, because in Zach Neal's case, there were basically two pitchers in the Pacific League who both looked like monthly MVPs, Zach Neale and Ayumu Ishikawa. And, you know, if you picked one of them out of a hat and one of them won, I would have been happy because they were both deserving.
Okay.
And I can't say that about any of the three awards this month.
Oh, you can't say that about the other three?
That's correct.
Okay, all right.
So with Masataka Yoshida, basically is the case study for all of these guys. He had a good month, but if you compared him to other similar players, there's at least one guy who's vastly better, one guy who's probably better. And you have to wonder, you know, I've said in past podcasts that I thought the people, they have the sponsors changed slightly. Nippon Seimei pushed the monthly MVPs to one of its subsidiaries. And so the selection was a little different this year. And sometimes I actually thought it was a little better in the sense that it seemed a little more open-minded. I thought the relief pitchers last month were quite good. I thought there were a couple of things that were quite good. It seemed much more flexible. But I think what happened this month was when they changed the system this year, they went to the selectors. Okay, for 5 months, we want you guys to pick the best ones you can pick. You know, do your best. If you get it wrong, don't worry, but do your best. And the 6 month, pick whoever you like. I mean, just go out and pick the guy at your favorite player because it's your reward.
It's your reward for doing such hard work.
You know, training. I don't mind. I don't mind so much when they would pick Ryoichi Adachi because he hit .450 with he basically hit no extra bases and drew zero walks, but he hit .450 with a bunch of singles, or Yohei Oshima when he did that. I don't mind that so much because it's just ignorant, you know, because you don't know any better. Because, oh, he hit .450, he must be the best player. Okay, that's just ignorance. But when you take two guys, okay, now in Masatoka Yoshida, I don't think he had a bad month, but it's like, okay, Hideto Asamura of Rakuten had a much better month than Yoshida did. And Yurisbel Graciel of the Hawks did about as well, you could argue for him. But giving it to the third best guy is a joke.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we go to the Central League and we have two more jokes.
Right. Yuki Nishi of Hanshin was the pitcher and Nobumasa Fukuda of Chunichi was the hitter, and I didn't get either one either, but hey.
Hey, Fukuda makes you wonder again if there isn't money exchanged or something, because he had a good month. But, I mean, compare him to Neftali Soto, to a team that's playing meaningful games in September.
Hey, the Dragons games were meaningful. They were almost in third place. They didn't get knocked out until the last week.
Fair enough. But Soto was so much better. I mean, he was like, it's like, okay, let's see. We've got one guy. Oh, wait, Fukuda hit like 10 points higher. And so Soto hit like 18, you know, like 8 more home runs and drove in like 9 more runs and scored the same number of runs and drew more walks. And basically, you name it, he did it better. Okay, let's pick number two. Maybe that was it. Maybe that was it. It was be kind to number two month because they tried harder. I don't know.
I think, you know what it is? I think, you know, they've been training these monkeys all summer long. The monkeys threw a tantrum.
Okay, and then the pitchers, as you said, Yuki Nishi, I don't get either, because Shun Yamaguchi easily had a better month. They had similar numbers in the sense that they both had good months. Nishi, and Fukuda also, and I want to say this about Yoshida as well, they had perfectly good months. They were perfectly acceptable months, except they were certainly months when somebody was
better,
kind of a lot better. So just, you guys, go like chew on it or something. Do something. I want to say get a job, but you're probably well paid to do this nonsense.
Right.
Hashtag high heat.
So over the course of the season, as we change the subject and let you settle down over there, Shun Yamaguchi of the Giants and Hayato Sakamoto, also of the Giants, were the only Yomiuri players to win the honor, and Senga won it twice for SoftBank. He won in May and June. And then Three Lions, and it's not the triplets whom you would think would have won the honor, the player of the month honor. It was Hotaka Yamakawa. Yes, I would have thought him. And then Shogo Akiyama won it way back in May, after Yamakawa won it in April. And then Tomoya Mori, he won it in August. But no Takeya Nakamura. He did not win any.
You, people aren't kind of listening weird. To you, John. That's a meme.
You're not the only one.
Yeah, I'm jealous that other people aren't listening to you as well. No, what I'm saying is not enough people are listening to you.
There you go. All right, and the one more thing I wanted to ask you listeners, as well as Jim, and I annually ask for your biggest moment or that moment of the season that you'll remember this season for a long time. Now, of course, I was out of the country for the two no-hitters, so I'm not going to have those on my list, unfortunately, because I didn't see them live. But I think both of them were probably really great moments, but I won't have them on my list because I wasn't here. But anyway, during this next week, please mull over your moment of the season. Maybe it might still come here in the Japan series. It might be a great moment, so we'll collect those and I'll read some of them off next week. So send those to us on Twitter or via email, or leave a note on the Facebook page, and let's go to fielding questions. All right, so we've had this on the back burner for quite a while, and as I mentioned on Twitter earlier this evening, on Saturday, I just wanted to devote enough time to it because it was such a great question and a great talking point. Now, I thought it was JoJo on Twitter. He's at Homer Bunt, who sent it in. But when he said we had answered his question, then it got me thinking maybe I had these things out of order. But I'll blame everything that happens on the Twins, and so it's not my fault. So the question reads as follows. Kazuhiro Kiyohara was a big guy. He was 6'2", 228 pounds, with power, who took walks, and it seems like he would have starred in the MLB. Who are 10 players you've seen, and that's the key point here, you've seen who would have started in MLB but never came over? So, Jim, I'll let you go first, because I know you've been itching to get this list off of your chest here.
Yeah, I know, because, you know, I got a skin condition from this damn thing. Okay, so my guys are in not any particular order. They're basically guys who played from the time I came to Japan in the mid-80s. I'll just start. Koji Akiyama, former Hawks manager, Hawks and Lions, center fielder. Hiromi Matsunaga, who was a third baseman, power-hitting third baseman for the Hankyu Braves and Oryx Blue Wave.
Mm-hmm.
Masaki Saito, Hall of Fame pitcher for the Yomiuri Giants. He was kind of like a sidearm Masahiro Tanaka, same kind of build. Just big bulldog of a guy. Kimiyasu Kudo, who my favorite manager. And Kazuhiro Kiyohara, I have to include him as well. Shinji Sasaoka, who the new manager of the Hiroshima Carp, was just an amazingly amazing pitcher who probably was just, his career was ruined by Koji Yamamoto, the Carp manager. Takahiro Ikeyama, former power-hitting shortstop for the Yakult Swallows. Johnny Kuroki, Tomohiro, in quotes, Johnny Kuroki. He would have been wonderful in MLB if he had
a chance.
You
think so?
Oh, sure.
Huh.
That big, heavy, heavy fastball. Sure, he would have been lights out if he'd starred. He would have been good. These old guys would have all been good major leaguers. Now, one of the problems with these guys is that these are not guys you would, Akiyama and Matsunaga. If there had been free agency then, I don't want to talk about that. But if these guys had been able to go to MLB when they were 25, the hitters, when they were 25,
right.
23, 25, just really deadly. Basically, they grew up, you adapt your game to suit the competition.
Gotcha. Okay.
And Kuo Taiyuan, he's not Japanese, but he was the Orient Express who pitched for the the Cebu Lions.
And that's why I call Zach Neal the American Express. But yeah. Okay.
And Tomoaki Kanemoto.
Okay.
Okay.
Is that 10?
That is 10.
Right?
That is 10.
Yeah, I feel, okay, we had a little bit of overlap, but now I came to Japan in 1990, and my first full Japanese baseball season was 1991, and I'm limiting my list to guys I saw play in person, mm-hmm. and so I actually didn't see Saito and a couple of other guys you mentioned in person, because by the time I saw Sasaoka
he threw a no-hitter like 1990.
I came in October of 90, so I didn't see any really.
Excuse me, 90, 2000. I was at the Yomiuri when he threw a no hitter. That was like in his 2000? Second. Yeah, that was like in his second career as a starter.
Yeah, well, okay. I missed that game, but but it was one game. I mean, geez, we had some guys throw some no hitters.
Sure.
We won't talk about that. But anyway, so the crossover, I'll just go with the crossover guys that we had, the overlap. And I had Kiyohara on my list as well. I had Koji Akiyama and I had Tomoaki Kanemoto. But another player I saw play live was Hiromichi Ochiai.
Oh, yeah.
Whom I think would have been a star in the States, a big
sure. Again, the thing is, Ochiai would have had difficulties, I think, a little. Well, he was so smart, you know, so he probably would have had a Hideki Matsui kind of career. His problem was that he didn't turn pro until he was like 25 years old.
Well, I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, he still played. By the time I saw him, he was with the Dragons, and he was a sludgy old guy, but he was still a great hitter.
And I think he would have adapted well.
Well, that's what made me fall in love with Japanese baseball, because I didn't know, from all I had heard, I didn't know there were players like him over here.
Oh, so okay.
This guy that I saw strutting around doing his own thing, not doing all this team oriented stuff, I thought, this kind of guy is over here. He would have done great with an American team, because he would have fit right in. So, I thought he was number one. Michihiro Ogasawara, I thought, was a guy who probably could have played. Shinnosuke Abe.
Oh, yeah.
On my list. Hiroki Kokubo, slugger, now the. And the former manager of the national team. Seiichi Uchikawa, I think he would have done well in the States had he gone over. He would have been a slap hitter, one of those. He would have been the right handed Ichiro type. For a while, without the speed, but just a guy who just constantly making contact and getting.
So I think of him as when he was this huge second baseman with the Bay Stars, and
yeah,
I think wow, what a future he would have had. But it took him a long time really to find himself after that. But anyway, yeah, go ahead. I'm agreed. He would have been a really good hitter in MLB, sure.
Yep, and then Hayato Sakamoto of the Giants, and then my last guy, I think. I'm surprised you left him off the list just because he has done so much in Japan, and that's Hitoki Iwase.
I thought about him. I did think, you know, there's like 10 people is not enough. I mean,
it's not enough, but yeah, the list was 10. I mean, these are guys we thought would have been, I think these guys would have been able to play and
well, with Iwase, there was also, stars, I did think about Iwase, and the reason I left him off the list is because I knew that the MLB schedule probably would have destroyed his body. He had enough trouble adjusting to the MLB schedule because of his crooked back.
Sure, but I thought, you know, a lot of it could be circumstantial. And if you get in the right team situation where the travel, you know, some West Coast team where you can play a lot of West Coast games and you don't have to travel all that much, then yeah, it would have been okay. And I thought a guy on the fringe was Takashi Toritani, who's going to be leaving the Hanshin.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard.
Don't think he would have been a star, but I certainly think he could have gone and played when he was in his prime.
Yeah, most of the biggest problem, and I think with most of the Japanese players, is that they adapt their games. I don't want to say it's like a lowest common denominator, but they adapt their style of play to what they see in NPB,
mm-hmm.
and it's a hard adjustment to go back to learn, to pick up the lessons, to acquire the lessons when they become 27, 28, 29, that other players are picking up and learning when they're 21 and 22.
Right, right.
Because the pitches they've never, especially for hitters. For pitchers, it's less so because, you know, you're the one in charge of which pitch is being thrown. But as a hitter, you're the one who has to take what you get. And you have to be able to handle what you get, regardless of, you know, and if you've got a weakness, that's all you're going to get.
Right, right. And it's a lot of adjustment for these guys, you know, with the culture and the different kind of baseball. It's the reverse of...
Sure. I think with, you know, and you have to think, okay, well, physically, of course, Kiyohara could have done it. Mentally, I don't know, but and this is also a thing because there's players, I mean, like Hiroyuki Nakajima, there's should have been no obstacles between him and playing in the majors, even at the advanced age that he went. But the fact is, he just wasn't mentally up to the challenge.
Yeah, and it is a challenge, and they do throw hard, and they do, even though Tadahito Iguchi once told me that the guys don't do as much homework as maybe they should.
Hey, Ichiro said Japanese junior high school players have better fundamentals than major leaguers. So there you go.
Yeah. So take that. So yeah,
take that,
buddy. But yeah, I like the crossover and I like that we had different guys, and there's of course a little bit of a gap because you came and you started watching Japanese baseball a few years before I did. So you got to see some of these guys like Sasaoka and Saito.
I was thinking of guys like Choji Murata. Wow.
But yeah, if you go way back, there's guys throughout history.
I remember when he was pitching every Sunday for the Lotte Orioles, and I think he was the Marines by then. I was the Orioles still in Kawasaki, and this guy was just lights out, this like 75-year-old guy throwing 95 miles an hour and striking out 12 guys. Every Sunday was a treat.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, you guys can send us our list. This was a fantastic question. I hope it was you, Jojo, who sent it in. Thank you very much for the question. Now, you guys can send in your list for this, and then also let us know your moment of the season.
I want to interject here because, you know, when you say moment of the season, I think of a couple of things. So you're talking about sort of the emotional, dramatic moment of the season, right?
Well, something big,
yeah, because when you mentioned the one that you thought was mine, and I was thinking, okay, I'm split into two. I like that idea, okay, a dramatic moment of the season, something that stands out in your mind, but maybe also a play which is different, something you saw that you'll never forget, maybe not dramatic in the long run, but something that really... You can't. Is that too much to ask?
No, that's fine.
Play of the year.
Okay,
they're two different things because one's kind of something that happens in a game. You know, I mean, people talk about the flip, whatever that is, but you know, something that stands out as a great play or something you think, wow, this makes me love baseball.
Yeah, certainly that's one way to interpret it, and I like to think about what. Those plays that you are going to remember this season, you're going to say, well, I remember that for sure because that was 2019 because I associated with this play.
Mm.
So something like that,
okay.
Some kind of moment that happened that went on. Send those ideas to us on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat or the hashtag whatever you want to call it. send questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com or, like I said before, leave us a note on the Facebook page. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your Japan series.
And see you at the ballpark, wherever that may be.